Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates. We're reporting once again live from Zambia. I'm with Teresa again. Welcome, Teresa.
Thank you, Jen. Good afternoon, everyone out there.
So what we're talking about this afternoon is our next big strategic focus for 2015. We've just spent the last several days putting the final touches on a plan to add 200 children to the program, bringing us to a total of...
1,000, Jen. Yeah, 1,000, you can imagine.
Oh, we're so excited. And I've learned so much in this process of working with the team to do this, and I have so many questions for Teresa, so I'm going to keep us moving. But kind of the central question I have, Teresa, as we start, is why is the nutrition program, the lunch program, why do you feel like that's really the main important focus of the Living Compassion Project? There are so many things we do, so many different aspects of the work in Living Compassion, but that's really the foundation. And I wonder if you could say a little bit about why you feel like that's kind of the most important foundational piece.
Yes, Jen, the feeding program is the main foundation of the project. Why I say this is because of the nutrition aspect mm-hmm. of it. Mm-hmm. The children are getting a balanced diet, and the malnutrition levels have gone down ever since the conception of this program.
Mm-hmm.
Feeding 800 children, those children are safe from malnutrition.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but we still have more children out there who have this malnutrition.
Yeah, and it's certainly a leading cause of illness and even, unfortunately, death for young children in Zambia is malnutrition. And so there's always more room to add children to that. And as you said, Teresa, we were talking about it a while ago, that once you tackle the malnutrition aspect, then you can really get into everything else. Then you can start on education. Then you can start on the holistic well-being of each child. But you've really got to tackle that malnutrition first.
Yes, Jen, definitely. Food comes in first on the malnutrition background. If a child has no food, that child can never be happy.
Yeah.
That child can never concentrate in school, even though they were pushed to school.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, with the clean water on board, Jen, we are doing it here at Living Compassion.
Yeah, really pairing that clean water and full nutrition is really the starting place. So in a couple of days after I'm gone, you're going to begin that process of adding the 200 children. It's fascinating how you do that. Can you talk a little bit about how you and the team will go about that?
Yes, Jen, when you go, it's my duty and my team to start going around the community, finding the vulnerable children. I depend this on my team.
Mm-hmm.
I'll ask each of my team members to identify mm-hmm. children who are very vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and once we have identified these children, me and four others
mm-hmm.
will have to go around to each family to assess that family,
mm-hmm.
talk about their child,
mm-hmm.
and talk about what Living Compassion does
mm-hmm.
and the feeding program.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm. It's really amazing. When I heard that you and a subcommittee, sort of five or six folks on the team, will go and speak with every single family and educate them about the opportunity that their child is being invited into and all that Living Compassion is, it highlighted for me why the project is so successful, because there's such a community base to it. And the other piece of it being that it's the benefit of having all of the folks running the NGO be from the community, which is somewhat rare. Often an NGO in Zambia is run by people who are not from that area. Maybe they're from Zambia, but they don't have the same background as the people that they're working with. And so Teresa was telling me that when they go to add children, it's actually quite easy because, of course, everyone in the cooperative lives right there in Cantalumba. So it's just a matter of, well, who are your neighbors? Who do you see? Who are the kids you see in the streets who are really in need? And that's how you go about choosing who are the next 200 that are the most vulnerable.
Yes, Jen, and in a way, we are inviting these parents to know what we do.
Yeah.
Yes, and to be part of Living Compassion.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So that leads me to my next question, Teresa, which is another thing I've really learned a lot about in the last week or so, is I wonder if you can speak to the benefit that the project is to the parents. You know, obviously the children are receiving quite a bit, but there are also a number of benefits for the parents as well.
Yes, Jen. The parents are benefiting in a way that without the child coming to Living Compassion to eat, they never had that peace of mind.
Mm-hmm.
But now they have children that come to eat at Living Compassion. They have that peace of mind to go and do their little businesses without bothering that I need to get off, I need to do this, I need to do this. Mm-hmm. They are focusing on one business.
Mm-hmm.
On that business, at the end of the day, that will bring food on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was such a subtle point that I'd never thought of before. I mean, it's obvious, of course, that having your child go somewhere where they're going to have a good, solid meal and they're going to be attended to and cared for and they're going to get help with their education, that obviously lifts a very large emotional burden. But I'd never thought about that piece before that Teresa was explaining to me, that for parents whose children don't have that opportunity, their attention is really split throughout the day, that they're very much in survival mode, like, how can I get some kind of food to feed my child at all today? But that parents whose children are in Living Compassion can wake up in the morning and go off to whatever they're doing and really focus their efforts as much as they're able to do on whatever small business, as you said, that they're trying to create so that they can support their family. So there's a real economic benefit to it as well.
Yes, Jen, there is. There is, definitely.
So a couple of other really fun topics that Teresa and I have been talking about and I knew would be fun for folks to hear. So you are shopping for 800 children every day. Every day you're feeding 800 children, and it's soon to be 1,000. And I think about when we're on retreat, and I mean at the very, very most, you know, our biggest retreat ever of a year is maybe 60 people. And when we go to grocery shop for those 60 people, it's enormous, the volumes of food that we're buying. You know, everyone's looking at us in the store, what are you doing? So I can't even imagine what that's like to be shopping for 1,000 children. So could you tell us a little bit about how that process works?
Yes, Jen. To us, it's very simple because we have divided our time into doing this. We divide the shopping trips mm-hmm. into two each month.
Okay.
Yes, we do it twice. And when we do this, I depend on my team again. So I choose a team of 6 members.
Okay.
Plus me, that's 7.
Okay.
Then we separate.
Okay.
3 remain in Lobuto. Okay. To get the mealy-meal.
Okay.
3 go to Masala uh-huh. to do the beans and the groundnuts, the onions. Then 3 go into town
okay.
to do the rice, the soya chunks, and the cooking oil.
Okay.
And then we do that, and after we are done, we communicate using a mobile phone
okay.
to each other.
Okay.
Then hire. We have a truck guy who's very friendly with us.
Uh-huh.
And he's Mr. Mpundu. We call him Bashi Mpundu because he's the father of twins.
Okay, can I just pause? Because for most people listening, that goes right over their head. So, Bashi Mpundu. So, any adult who has a child is no longer called by their name. For example, Teresa, her friends don't call her Teresa. They would call her by mother of and her son's name. So the truck driver you're talking about, his name is Bashi Mpundu, mm-hmm. because Mpundu means twins.
Yes.
So it means he has a set of twins. And anyone who has twins is automatically, doesn't matter what, normally you're named after your eldest child, so you'd be mother of or father of whoever your eldest child is. But if you have a set of twins, that trumps, and then you're called, so in this case he's called Bashi Mpundu, father of twins.
Yes, and then Bashi Mpundu, we contact him. He picks up first the people in town.
Okay.
Then to Masala, the last is Lobuto.
Okay.
Then we take our groceries to our property, where there's another team waiting to offload. That's how we do it, twice every month.
And I said to Teresa as we were talking about this, you have to do a blog on that one day. I mean, it's just so, you know, sort of business as usual for the team, but for us it's so much fun. So, and I love the thing you were telling me, Teresa, about you have to be very fair and careful about who you assign to each of the positions, because it's a big treat to be, say, the person on the team who's going into town, because a lot of people don't get to go into town.
Yes, Jen, not everyone goes into town. Let's not even to say out of Kantolomba to Lobuto. So it's a privilege when you send three people
mm-hmm.
to town, three
mm-hmm.
people to Masala.
Mm-hmm.
So I usually rotate among the team,
uh-huh.
not the same people go every time.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Uh-huh. So on a Friday, you make your plan. You, as you said, you have to do it on a Saturday because otherwise it would disturb the food program. So everyone meets in Lobuto, and then you get on a minibus. Some people drop off at Masala to get the beans, etc. Some people go into town to get the soya chunks, etc. And then, I love the part about, and you have to make sure that on each team, there's one person who has a cell phone,
so
that once they're done, they can call and say, okay, we're ready.
Yes.
And then once everyone gives the high sign, the green light, then
mm-hmm.
Teresa calls in Bashi Mpundu,
mm-hmm.
and then he knows you guys, so
yes.
he starts making the rounds. He knows, pick up the guys in town, pick up the folks at Masala, pick up the folks in Lobuto. In comes the truck with huge bags of all of this stuff, and then the whole team is there back at the property to offload it. And then you call it a day.
Yes.
And then repeat 2 weeks later.
Yes, definitely.
And then we don't have too much time left, Teresa, but I wonder if you could just give us a quick summary then of what happens each day as you're preparing all that food. How does that happen?
Yes, each day, Jen, our day starts at the property at 06 in the morning. We have two ladies assigned there to start off, just start with the braisers. Then at 6:45, the whole team arrives.
Okay,
except for the teachers, of course.
Except for the teachers.
Mm-hmm.
So quick pause on that, because, of course, for most Americans,
mm-hmm.
when you're going to go cook something, the preparation is turn the dial on the stove. But in order to have all the preparations ready by the time you need to do the meal or do the rice or whatever it is that you have to cook, you have to get the braziers, you have to get the charcoal ready. So they start burning it at 6. And then at like 7, I think you said, then they'll put the huge pots of water on
mm-hmm.
to begin to boil, so that at about, let's say, if you're having enshima, if you're having mealy meal, what time would they start cooking the enshima on a given day?
On a given day, enshima starts at 7:30.
7:30.
Yes.
Okay, so they're starting the fire
mm-hmm.
at 6, an hour and a half ahead of when the actual enshima will be cooked. And then even enshima takes a long time to cook itself, right? So if you started at 7:30... When do you eat it?
When we start at 7:30, the children start eating at about 10:30.
10:30, 7:30, 3 hours later.
Yes.
Wow.
The process of the enshima is long because of the huge pots. Yes.
Yeah. So
if it was in a small pot, it could take maybe 30 minutes, but because of the hugeness of the pots, it's a long process.
Yeah.
Yes.
And a ton of exercise.
And a ton of exercise. And mind you, it's not only one pot.
Uh-huh.
Maybe four pots.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the same.
And maybe now five with 1,000 children.
Yes, maybe we'll have five big pots now.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, Teresa, I truly think we'll have to come back to this, because I think we could do a whole good news update on each of those processes, the shopping process and the cooking process and all of it. It's so much fun. And it just gives such a little tiny window into the extraordinary work that you and your team are doing every single day. So a ton of gratitude to you and to your whole team, and congratulations on 10 years and 1,000 children.
Thank you, Jen. It's my pleasure. In Bemba, we say tuatotela.
Tuatotela. Amen. Okay, Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Teresa. And good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael. Oh, I'm grinning. Oh, it's like being there. Oh,
it's great.
Oh, can I tell one quick story that I think you probably remember? Several years ago, I don't know how many years ago now, my grandson and four other college age chaps came over, so they were there for one of these shopping trips that Teresa just described.
Oh, wow!
And so they think they're pretty hale and hearty boys, so they're gonna go and they're gonna help the gals get the supplies. And they went and picked up these sacks of mealy meal, and they described afterwards, it's like. trying to pick this thing up, and the women are just are just falling over laughing. And then when the guys accept defeat, these little gals, you know, they're not, these are not huge women, and some of them are old enough to be grandmothers to these guys. They just pick these bags up, put them on their heads, and walk off. It's just, I mean, it's amazing. When Jen and Teresa were saying it's great exercise, again, there are some old videos of all of us trying to stir those pots of that stuff. And I mean, it's just, it defies belief that anybody can do that, let alone these little gals who, you know, are not burly. But my goodness, they're strong, and my goodness, they have stamina. Because, well, just as they laid out, you know, cooking for 800 children outdoors with these giant pots, it just, it is, you know, I go to this place where, because what Jen said, you know, for us, cooking a meal is, your preparation is, you go over and turn the stove on, right? And when, you know, anytime we get to that place of, oh, no, you know, I have to cook dinner, or I have to do the dishes again, or, you know, any of those kinds of things, it's really good to just have a picture of what that's like every single day, to go through that routine. And then, of course, once all the children have eaten, you're scrubbing those giant pots.
Yeah.
Right? Getting ready for the next day. Oh, it's just so fabulous. Wow.
It is fabulous.
So,
yeah, that's great.
That's so fun.
That is fun. I had not heard that story before about the college guys, so that's fun too.
Oh, I mean, they, and you know, they were all good sports, so they really, you know, they were just in awe. It wasn't, it didn't hurt their, you know, their morale at all. It was just like, wow.
Wow.
Yeah. And so it's kind of that, you know, the old story of if you had a newborn calf and you picked it up every day, could you pick it up when it was full grown? And you know, there, it's not like that, of course, but similar in the sense that these women have just all of their lives lifted massive amounts of stuff up onto their heads and walked around with it to the point that you know, it's just how you do it every day. So impressive.
It's just life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we sit in traffic, and they, you know, yeah, I mean, we look for ways to maintain our fitness, right? And they just get up in the morning, and their fitness opportunities are all day long. Yeah, it's very fun.
That's great. Yeah, wonderful. I'm so glad these shows are archived also, so for those folks who are on here live, they can get it fresh.
Yeah. And if somebody has the time and energy, all of those blogs, the whole thing is available for us to go through. We keep talking to Jen about doing a book, on, you know, because it's such a marvel of success for you know, for people who are doing this kind of work. It's just it's almost unprecedented. I think we could say it's unprecedented. The relationships, the closeness, the whole thing, and what has happened in that community as a result of our partnership. It's really quite extraordinary. So at some point we're gonna see if we can get Jen enough time and space from everything else she does to start putting that together, because it would just be, I'd be so happy to fund a coffee table book, you know, one of those, because it would really need to be done in pictures. The pictures that we have are just extraordinary. Yeah.
Yes.
We're very lucky. We really are.
We are.
We're so fortunate to get to do that work.
Yes. And it's always at this point in the conversation that I have to say, practice really works, and it works across cultures and content and language, and whether you're specifically talking about aspects of the personality and projection, or you're just being practice.
Yes, yes, yeah, Exactly so. And good for us to realize, of course, that whatever our Sister Phil always points out, that Christianity is an Eastern religion. You know, all of the spiritualities that we enjoy in this country, just about all of them, with the exception of Native American spirituality, come from other cultures.
Yes.
Yeah? So when people are coming from a place of loving kindness, compassion, understanding, open-heartedness, you know, it just doesn't matter where we are on the planet. It's seen, experienced, and received in the same way. And that's just a great reminder for us that circumstances are irrelevant. Hearts are everything.
Yes, exactly. And I have some announcements here.
Good! What are we doing?
We have opened registration for In This Way, I Do Most Deeply Vow to Train Myself.
Mm-hmm.
And you're invited to join us and participate in this brand new retreat.
It's going to be a good one. I know we always say that, but in our defense, they always are. They always are good. So
it's a true statement.
Yeah, it's just true.
And more information on locations and dates can be found at livingcompassion.org/schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And coming right up, check in with practice 3 times a day with stop, drop, and text. In the program, we send a text about any process we're practicing with, and we receive a facilitator's response.
Mm-hmm.
There are limited spots, so sign up soon at livingcompassion.org/stop, drop, and text practice. And there's a dash in between each of those words, stop, drop, and text practice.
All right. When's the deadline for signing up for that? Do you know? Does it say?
It doesn't say. I'm not sure we've ever reached the deadline because the spot's still up. So close.
Oh, okay. Well, all I was going to say is, you know, as you well know, we're in an email class right now. And so people are very busy with their practice opportunities, but that's going to finish soon. And so it'd be lovely if people had something to go right into as soon as they get finished with that.
Yeah. Exactly. So visit livingcompassion.org/schedule for more information on these and all the other events that are up there.
Okay.
And a few reminders to make guest show to indicate your desire to talk with Sherry today. Press *6 and then 1. And 5 minutes, please, for your conversation, and focus on one topic would be great.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's get started here.
Here we go.
First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. This is Janice from North Carolina.
Well, hello. How are you?
Hi. I'm doing pretty good. It's pretty cold out here, but just staying warm.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. But it's beautiful.
It is beautiful. We're kind
cold
of
and beautiful.
Covered in a blanket of snow right now.
Lovely. Lucky you. Lucky you.
Yes. Lucky me.
Yeah. Yeah. So what's going on?
Well, I just hadn't called in a long time, and so I thought I would call in. You know, I was being told and was pretty sure that I wouldn't get on.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing? Yeah. Isn't it amazing how much those voices in the head know about the future? It's really impressive, isn't it? And what's really impressive is how wrong they are so much of the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have anything specific to talk about except that I've always wanted to ask you a question that sometimes I think I have a grasp on and sometimes I don't. And so why don't I just ask you this question?
Good.
You know, when so the language that we use is we're here to take care of the human.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure why this. Now I don't even know why I want to know this, but if you, so, the human. I'm not real sure exactly what the. Let me see how I can ask this. So, that like subpersonalities, I think are conditioning, or you say that it's a subpersonally. It's like a personality that has a limited perspective, like just on life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's part of conditioning. Is that the human that we're taking care of?
No. Well, yes. No and yes.
I mean, I think that's part of
yes.
conditioning.
Yes. So here we go. So a child is born, and the child has a karma. Okay? And so that's as vast as we want to go. So the part of the karma is physical, right? Just you're sort of built to be this size and this color and this whatever it is, you know, all of the physical attributes.
I'm very athletic. I was just
You're tall, athletic. You have the color hair and eyes that you have, and you know, that sort of thing. And there are also karmic predispositions. So some people are born with a tendency toward certain diseases, certain conditions, right? That depending on how things go. Okay. So here comes this little package, and it arrives into an environment, whatever that is. So let's say you have two parents who are excited for your arrival and really happy you're there and that sort of thing. Not everybody has that experience, obviously, right? We sometimes forget that, especially those of us who like to stay in a story about how awful our childhood was, right? You know that one? So I know you don't, because I know your mother. But, you know, there's a lot of, you know, my mother mistreated me, my father mistreated me, and we can forget that a lot of people don't even have the luxury of having one of those to treat them, period. But let's say yours was a, you know, oh, yay, here she comes, sort of an arrival. You arrive into those circumstances. So there's your mother with all of her karma, her conditioning, her beliefs, her assumptions, her unexamined opinions and philosophies and all of that that she got from eons of eons. And then here's your father, same thing. You know, everybody around, all you have to do is go to a family gathering and know that the family is not one thing, right? It's all of these different attitudes and opinions and that sort of thing. And so here you arrive with whatever you're bringing to the party, and you're going to have to adapt and adjust to all of that in order to be able to survive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? So mm-hmm. So you go along, you're a child, and I wish I could remember. I think it's something like you'll hear 40,000 no's to 5,000 yeses before the age of 3 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So you're getting a lot of information about everything, and you're adjusting and you're modifying and you're going up against it, and then you give up on that and you slide off over there and you're making it, right? So then you hit puberty. Now you hit a whole new level of who am I going to be in order to make it in the world. Now there's a whole different level of identity being created almost consciously by the individual in order to, okay, so I'm going to be this way and that way, and I want to be a part of that crowd, and I want to dress like this, and I want to wear my hair like that, and I'm going to focus on that when I get a job there, whatever it is, okay? Then now you're launched into the world, and you're doing whatever it is that you're doing largely as a result of all of that, okay?
And so there is we called it in the, I can't remember what the email class was, but the crust of egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate around what is an authentic expression of life. And that authentic expression of life has really been pretty much obscured for most people in that process. Yeah? Are we? Okay. So now, if we imagine that whole package, that whole entity, we're going to call the human being. Right? There's that authentic nature. There's the innocence. There's the what started out, and then there's everything that happened to that being through time. And it's that we are going to embrace and free from the suffering, the bondage of all that has been added.
Yeah, so that whole package that was created, getting back to the core without the layers.
Well, actually, we're embracing all of it.
Well, all of it, yeah.
And what we're required to do in order to do that is to move out of the world of the conditional, which is everything that we were describing there, all those layers and all that stuff, into the unconditional, into conscious, compassionate awareness, Buddha nature, Christ consciousness, if you will. Okay, mm-hmm. The unconditional, and we, now my fingers are doing little quote marks in the sky, we identify with that conscious, compassionate awareness, and from that place, embrace the human being into unconditional love and acceptance.
Mm-hmm. Which is embracing all of that.
Yes. So there's no longer, so you have this annoying habit of, I don't know what, biting your fingernails or twisting your hair or saying, you know, correcting somebody's English or whatever it is. And people have just been on you all your life about that. And you've tried to change it and you just haven't been able to do it, right? And you feel like a bad person because you try so hard and you always fail. And, you know, that whole story that people live in, and that just gets embraced. From conscious, compassionate awareness, none of that matters. It's absolutely irrelevant.
So the authentic being is just all of that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Because everything is life.
Yeah.
If we were of a different religious bent, we would say it's all God. And nobody has a problem until we start dividing it up into that's God and that's not God. That's authentic and that's not authentic. Well, actually, it's all one thing. It's all non-separate reality. And it's from that perspective that we embrace everything that has been seen as separate.
Yeah, and as you were, you know, walking through that, it was fascinating. It's like my whole life. I mean, I could just see my whole life. You know, like I could really relate to what you were saying, and my whole life was kind of going by.
Yeah.
I mean,
and
it's
so
kind of freeing, I mean, to embrace all of it.
Oh, yes. Yes. It's not license, right? It's not permission. We're not indulging. It's not that. So, you know, just find the nearest couch, stretch out, eat bonbons, and drink beer for the rest of your life. That's not what we're talking about. We're seeing that all of that in the world of ego identity is so important, that is worth punishing a human being over. It's just silliness. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. There's no evil intent. There's nothing wrong. There's no problem.
And one time you were talking about how the Buddha taught not reincarnation, but
rebirth.
But rebirth. and how this may not have been what you meant at all, but I got a new look at karma from this. But I just want to say it out loud, which before you kind of explained rebirth, I always thought karma was my karma, and that I wanted to get rid of my karma because I didn't want to be born again with, you know, this karma that I have in this lifetime. But it, for whatever reason, I liked the new twist that it's not necessarily my karma. You know, it's just karma out there in the world, and I don't want the karma that I'm working on to just be out there for anybody. I mean,
yes.
So this, that sounds separate, but I just it was more.
Well,
this
is the example that I always go to with that. Okay, because this is the kind of thing that relationships are ruined over. Okay, so there's the house, and there's the condition of the house, and if you look at everything that needs to be done, the house is a mess. Okay, if you look at everything in terms of which of those messes is mine and which of those messes are somebody else's.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm willing to clean up my messes, but I'm not willing to clean up anybody else's messes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's how egocentricity approaches life, right? And what we're saying here is the house is a mess. It's my house. It's all my house. It's all my mess. It's all my privilege to clean it up.
Mhm. Yeah, I like that.
Good.
That also
all right.
is very freeing. Okay, well, thank you. Thank you so much.
You are so very welcome. Enjoy the snow.
Touch. Okay. Bye. Thank
all
you.
Right.
Thank you, Michael.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Janice. You're listening to Open Air. And we have another caller here, Sherry.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Michael and Sherry, it's Jodine in San Francisco.
Well,
Hi.
How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing okay at the moment. It's been a couple of months since I could call in. But at the moment, my life circumstance is that I'm not working right now. And so it was my job that was conflicting with the show for many, many months last year.
Yeah.
It's very easy for me to call right now.
no job, no conflict.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's been like 4 weeks since I've been off work. What I wanted to talk about was kind of something that occurred to me over the process, like as the time went by. So I'm not working right now because I have this illness, because I have Parkinson's disease, and it's been kind of interfering with some of the stuff I do at work, not like all of it, but we got down to this place where like my department needs to decide if they can kind of redefine my job so I can keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, it turns out, is kind of taking a while. And so I'm kind of in limbo, you know, waiting to find out, you know, will I go back to some modified job or will I not be going back, you know, to this job?
Mm-hmm.
The really interesting practice piece of that has been that This has happened to me a number of times, like not exactly this way, but there have been times when I've been sick and not able to work. And then, you know, for various different reasons, and then I, up to now, I've always, you know, eventually gone back to work.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw very clearly that I go through a process that's the same every time, it feels like. And this piece of it that was causing me a whole lot of suffering just like fell away about a week ago or something. And what I was seeing was that, basically I have, like every human being probably throughout time, I have this identification with, you know, what I do kind of equals who I am, and that kind of makes me a legitimate or an adequate person somehow.
Yeah, like, it sort of determines your worth.
Exactly. Yes. Mm-hmm. And so one fascinating piece of that I was looking at with my coach was that what came up for me around this not working was this this overwhelming sense of inadequacy, where somehow, like, you know, doing stuff, like being able to do stuff, equals that I'm adequate and I'm worthy, right? And that that just, you know, just being, you know, without doing or without much doing, which is kind of how my day is at this point.
Mm-hmm.
That's like just really this overwhelming sense of just like I'm not equal to this somehow. It's a little bit hard to explain, but I really got it as a duality, like doing equals adequate and just being, like conditioning starts to, I don't know, implode or something.
Yes, it does. isn't it wonderful that we have awareness practice so that we can, at least we know that the right response is not to be stressed over that. Right?
Yeah, it was kind of like, hang on, you know, just hang on.
Let it implode. What occurred to me when you were saying that is that I don't know if you have you ever read the poems of Ryokan?
I have not.
Okay. Well, I'm going to recommend it because he was such a perfect example. There's another word, but it's not coming to me. Of what you're describing. So. Because he was a Zen monk who simply lived in a little hut in the woods. That was it. And he wrote poems about it. But he didn't do anything. He had nothing going on that would give him a... if you're doing the email class, there was nothing that would go on his calling card. That he was just,
right. Mm-hmm.
Right? He's just Ryokan. And what he did and what he's left the world because of that is truly extraordinary. Now, probably the Buddha didn't do an awful lot all day long, but we have an idea that he did. You know, all he was doing was meditating and talking to people. I mean, you know, really. That's not that much. Jesus, as far as we can tell, just sort of walked around and talked to people, right? And yet we have this idea that they were doing something that's as valuable as going to the office or going to the crew or whatever it is, right? Because at least they were doing something. Well, actually, no, probably not. Probably much more like what you're doing now than what you were doing before.
Yeah, I mean, like that example is really interesting because his poems were preserved, right?
That's right. That's right.
And, you know, what if I looked at my former, potentially future modified job, whatever, you know, if anybody wrote that down, like, who would ever want to read that?
Yes, yes.
You know, like...
Yes.
And, well, and this is what I think, this is where I kind of, where everything dropped, like, last week, which is that I realized, like, conditioning was basically, like, screaming at me that without you know, without something to do, how can I, you know, how can, you know, what's important about that? Like, what good is your life going to be, you know, without some gainful, you know, doing or something?
Yes.
And I realized, you know what, I have come to this place in my life so many times before where I can't work, and I'm just stopped and looking at myself or looking at a blank wall since practice, and conditioning's telling me, you know, this is nothing. This is not meaningful. This is not worthwhile. You need to get back to work, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I just saw, what if that is completely opposite of what is true? What if life keeps bringing me back to this place because this is the most meaningful and worthwhile thing for me to be looking at karmically or whatever right now?
Well, now, we are fond of pointing out, as you well know, that if we want to know what's going on, we can look in the direction directly opposite to the one that conditioning is pointing us toward to have a pretty good sense of what is so, which is what you just said, right? So this is where I like to look at this. So there have been, God knows how many people born on this planet, and probably a huge number of them, whatever culture, whatever time in history, had essentially the same karma that you just described. What you do is who you are. It's what makes you worthwhile. It makes you somebody. It's important. It's what you need to do. And they all lived, and they all died, and nobody has any idea that they were here.
Yeah.
So what you're closing in on, and I think is very important for us all to consider, is that going to work, being somebody, doing that thing, keeps ego at the center of the universe, which it's very invested in, but it really doesn't do squat for the human being, except rob that human being of a beautiful opportunity actually to be alive.
Yeah, you know, and I think because it's spring right now, I think I got in California at least.
That's right. For the rest of the country, it's dead of winter. But yeah, for us, it's spring.
I think it was like there was a lot of support. Just, you know, walking around in my garden for what you just said, you know.
Yeah. 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 So maybe get a copy of Ryokan's poems and spend some time with him in the garden, and then look really at the if you're going to choose which life experience, not content, process, would you really prefer to have? Going to work every day so that you're somebody doing something, or having his life experience?
Okay, great.
And you'll let me know. You'll let me know, because now nothing's interfering with us talking. So that's very good.
Yeah, sooner rather than later.
Yep. All right. Thank you.
Okay, great to talk.
Take care.
Thanks so much. Thank you, Michael.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jodine. That's a great conversation, Sherry, and it's a lot for all of us to look at there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. It's good to just stop and check in once in a while with what really matters to us. It's easy.
Yeah.
It's easy to get caught up, to fall for that old, it's always going to be like this, I'm going to live forever, I don't really need to pay attention, I don't need to be alive now, I don't need to be present for this. Someday, out there, somewhere, something will be. But right now, yeah, just to step back from that and make sure that we're living the life we want to be living.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsor now, and then we'll be back on the air.
All right.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart. And one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Hello?
Hi.
We lost Michael.
Oh.
But we're here.
My apologies. I was on mute. I'm back now. And
All right.
We have another caller.
Yes, we do. Hi.
Hi. Good evening. I was calling to ask about, various people have been giving me this feedback that I don't make commitments, or that I'm afraid of commitments. And I've been looking at that, like fear of committing, or people get upset, like kind of like you're hard to pin down, you know. So I was wanting to look at that and like sort of the fear that comes up. Things
uh-huh.
like, you know, fear of missing out, fear of making the wrong decision. Because literally, like, inside, I panic. You know, I notice there's this panic that comes up. So I guess I was wondering some perspective on that.
If I say we're having a get-together a week from Friday, can you make it? It's like, well,
yeah.
I don't know. Right? Because you don't know. You might get 10 better offers between now and then.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Uh-huh. And so inside you panic. You probably wouldn't. That would be something you could live without, be okay without that. But where does that – is it your experience that – I mean, do you want to be pinned down? Is this a problem, or is this a problem for other people?
Oh. Well, I've noticed it's very frustrating for other people. And I mean, like with one incident, I noticed that somebody, like there's something I want to learn. And like somebody was saying, okay, so if you want to learn this with me, you need to commit to, like, you know, there's a certain commitment that's required. And then I was really frantic, like with all the what ifs, like, oh, but if I commit to this, then, you know, there are all these other things that I'm going to have to say no to. And yeah, so in that case, I'm noticing that maybe this maybe unwillingness or fear of committing can be maybe like I'm starting to think perhaps I'm trying to leave too many doors open, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And
so here's an image that I have for that. So
okay.
There's a circle where, say, 8 different roads meet, right? Mm-hmm. There's the, it's like the hub of the wheel there in the middle. There are the 8 different directions going off from this center place. And there you are in that middle. You have these 8 roads.
Mm-hmm.
And you could go down any one of them. But if you go down one, then you can't go down the other 7.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so you're going to spend your life in that circle. Now, what the voices would say is that if you go down the 1, you'll miss the other 7. Well, in reality,
yeah, and
you're going to miss,
not just miss the other 7. There's a sense of, like, ruining something. Like, the way I ruined, like, there's a way my life was supposed to go, and because I didn't make the right choice, I ruined something. So there's always this hesitancy, you know, is it right? Is it right? Is it right?
Right. But you can see with the example that I gave,
yeah,
that you have no life, right? You've missed all 8 options. Right? If you had picked any one, you would have at least had that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So bottom line, it's what your friends suspect, and it's what you have a growing suspicion about. It's a con job. Right? It's how egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate is controlling you and stealing your life energy.
Mm-hmm.
You know that, don't you?
Yeah. So you're saying basically I can't, I'm still in that circle, whichever one I choose.
Yep. Well, yes, because you won't choose. You won't choose. It paralyzes you. It keeps you, you know, but
exactly.
maybe there would be something better. Maybe there would be something better. And your whole life goes by, and you never had anything because you were always waiting for something better.
Yeah.
So that's really the bottom line bamboozle of the whole thing, because there isn't anything better. You know, that kind of thinking is from conditioned mind. It's dualistic, right? So it's based on the belief, the unexamined belief, that there's a parallel reality in which things are different or could be different than they are.
Right.
So I go to that party, but I should have gone to dinner with those folks.
Yes, but
no,
then when I go to
no.
the dinner, it's like it should have been the other one.
That's right. And that's the con. Because you are always, here's the truth of the matter, okay? You are always where you are, and you can only have as good a time as you can have.
Hmm.
So what the voices have done to you is make sure, number one, you're never where you are.
Exactly.
And you're never having a good time.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's time to cut them loose. They're not doing a darn thing for you. It's not possible to make a mistake. You can't make a wrong choice. Hmm. It's just not possible. But what you can do is let those voices ruin your life. And that's what you don't want to do.
So where do you place your attention, like when the voices are raging or when the fear is there, like where do you direct your focus? Because I've always paid close attention to the voices.
Right, yeah, they like that, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
Well, how do you want your life to be? How do you want to feel?
I want to be present and engaged and alive.
Okay. You want to be present, engaged, and alive. That's where you turn your attention. That's what you put your attention on. And and in the beginning, it's as simple as putting it on that sentence. I want to be present, engaged, and alive. I choose to be present, engaged, and alive. And when you say that, you are that. That's where you are. That's the life experience you're having.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Okay. So when the voices pull you away from that, they say, well, but to have that, you need to figure out what... No, you just
right.
left
or they dig up
want.
Some supposed mistake from, like, months ago.
That's right. That's right. And you just come back. That's why recording and listening is so powerful. Okay? You make recordings about it. You could do that one, you know, over and over and over and over and over. You just say it and then leave the little space where you say it to yourself and then you say it out loud and then you say it inside your mind and you just do that about 15 minutes and then you listen to it all the time until you really get it, that what I want is to be present, engaged, and alive. That really is what I want. Doesn't matter if I'm at the gas station. Doesn't matter if I'm at a fancy dress ball. It doesn't matter if the president has just invited me to the White House. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I want to be, I choose to be present, engaged, and alive. I am in this moment. And content is irrelevant.
Okay.
You got it?
Yeah. Can I ask a quick thing about the recording?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so I started recording. So when I was... so I started saying, you know, the things that were bugging me. And
nope. Don't
and
do that.
Then... Huh?
Don't do that.
Okay.
Yeah, we don't want to give any attention at all to what negative.
Okay, so when you record, it's just you don't record the like whatever you're like struggling with or whatever.
Nope. Nope.
Okay.
Now what you can do is let that person tell her story. Okay. So if I'll be you doing a bad version of you. Okay. So here I am. You know, I've been asked to do this, and the voices are driving me crazy. They're saying this and this and this and this and this and this, and it makes me so anxious, and I'm afraid. Okay, so I say all of that. I hold the recorder in my right hand while I say it. Then I put the recorder in my left hand. I listen to that person. You know, I really feel how painful that is for her and how she's suffering over that. And then I just sit still with that, and then I let the mentor speak back to her. But never, never, ever do we let, you know, egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate get the recorder. And
but what's the difference between what you just said and, like, the first one?
She's telling you about her experience. You're her mentor, best friend,
okay.
Therapist, counselor. It's not the voices that are driving her crazy talking.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, she's talking about what they do to her, and you can help her with that.
Okay, because I started doing that. I started recording, and then I played it back to hear it, and it was like, oh, my gosh, that's what I sound like. I kind of got sick of it. It's like hearing myself whining, and then I stopped.
No, yeah, yeah. That was a takeover, okay?
So that was the ego talking.
That's right. Ego says, oh, no, don't listen to that. That's disgusting. But it has no problem with her being stuck in that place, right? It's happy for her to be stuck in that place feeling that way. Hmm. But when she talks about how she feels, she gets called a complainer and a whiner.
Yeah.
Somebody has to listen to her and help her out of that place.
Okay.
That would be you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's subtle stuff, isn't it? I mean, it's really subtle. And as we go along, everything gets clear. We can see more clearly who the different players are. We start recognizing when it's the voice of self-hate when egocentric karmic conditioning is talking, and when it's a real genuine person who's struggling and suffering, and we're moved to compassion for that person, we
right.
want to help them. Yeah.
So when I'm recording to the recorder and saying I'm feeling anxious, I'm worried because the voices are telling me blah blah blah, that's genuinely me, not the.
Yep. Yep.
Okay,
and you'll be able to hear it. And if somebody comes in and says, "Oh, whiny, complaining baby," then you know that's self-hate, right? And you and yeah. So
like if I'm saying, "Oh, I hate myself," that's ego.
Well, that's an interesting one. It, yes, probably so. But that's a subtle place,
yeah.
because sometimes people really do get to that place where they're so identified with somebody who is beaten down that it's a legitimate experience of I hate myself.
Okay.
But we still, our commitment is to help that person out of that place, right?
Mm-hmm.
And here's the secret to the whole thing: if it's ego, if it's an identity, it won't want to be helped. If it's a real person, she wants to be helped. That's how we can tell.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. I didn't hear your name when you came on. With whom am I speaking?
This is Nancy.
Nancy. All right. Great talking with you, Nancy. Okay, take care. Keep in touch, huh?
Okay.
Okay. Good night.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for joining us, Nancy. You're listening to Open Air. Sherry, we're about 3.5 minutes to the hour here.
Let's try it. Maybe Susan is out there.
Okay, we'll try one more caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself? Next caller, are you there? Hello?
That was painful.
Yes, hello? Hello?
Oh, there we go.
Yes, hi.
You're live.
My name's... Yes, thank you. Hi, how are you, Sherry and Michael?
Good. Who is this?
This is Art in Florida.
Hey, Art.
Hi, I'm new.
Well, welcome. What's going on?
Thank you. I've just been doing recording and listening listening to the CD in my car a lot for the past 2 months or so, and it's really been helping me. It's been amazing. I have one foot in Florida and one foot in Maryland, and my wife is living in Florida full time, and so we're sort of, you know, we're in between. We've got kids involved and that sort of thing. But what I'm finding is that just the real stuff that's going on is I'm really discovering, you know, what I tell myself. And anyhow, so my, you know, I'm learning so much about the recording and listening. And I really just wanted to introduce myself and thank you. It's just amazing how, you know, I'm 53 years old, and I'm just starting to be aware of you know, what I do, you know, what the conditioning does to mm-hmm. me, and that I'm starting to be free.
Oh, God, isn't it just the best? It's we're doing an email class now, and of course, you know, I'm, as I like to say, born again about recording and listening because of exactly what you're saying. I just want everybody on the planet to get it and to see what a difference it can make in a human life. And I find myself writing to people regularly when they express the kind of thing that you're expressing. It's a miracle. It is a miracle to, in your case, live 53 years in this stuff and not really get what it's doing, and that there's an alternative and that you can be free of it, and then to realize that, it's just the best.
It really is. And so
yeah.
I just wanted to express my gratitude, of course, and I this is really fun. It's fun listening in, and I've got helpers. I've got a therapist and a couple other people that are very interested in my progress in this sort of thing, and they're fascinated with all of this. So thank you.
Good. Well, tell them there's room on board for everybody. And in April, we're going to be on retreat in North Carolina. It's not exactly on the route, probably, between Florida and Maryland, but it's not that far off it. You might stop by and see us.
Neat, in April. That sounds good. Thank you.
All right, good. And please feel welcome to join us here on Open Air anytime you get a chance.
Okay, I sure will. Absolutely. I'm
going to
have a habit of it.
Thank good,
so much.
Good. Thanks, Art. Great meeting you. Good night.
Great meeting you, too. Thanks, Jen.
Thanks for joining us, Art. And that was a great way to end a great show, Sherry.
Wasn't that? That was just perfect. We got to meet a fabulous new person.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Thanks. Love it. That just works.
Thank you. Yep, it does. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Sherry.
Talk to you next week.
Okay, talk to you then.
All right, thanks. Good night.
Good night.